you could turn to Romans 10 to start with. We're going to look at a number of scriptures I know you're familiar with, but we're going to look at those to sort of set a basis for looking at something else. We're going to end up in the book of Psalms sooner or later, but it's probably going to be later. Romans chapter 10. Again, you're going to be familiar with these. Verse 9, that if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus and shalt believe in thine heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be what?
Saved.
Saved. For with the heart man believes unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto what?
Salvation.
Salvation. Okay, so if we do that, according to those verses, we get what?
Born again. Salvation.
Salvation. Born again, saved, whatever you want to call it. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Again, I know you know this stuff, but just to sort of get a pattern going in your noggin, so when we start looking at something else a little bit later, it might be a little bit clearer. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Verse 2 says, for he saith, I've heard you in a time accepted, and in the day of salvation have I succored thee. Behold, later is the accepted time. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, later is the day of
salvation.
Now is the day of what?
Salvation.
Salvation. So according to those verses, when do we get salvation?
Now.
When we do Romans 10:9. Look at Romans 13. Romans chapter 13, verse 11 says, and that knowing the time, that later? Now it's time to wake up out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. I thought we already had salvation. According to what we read in Romans 10:9-10 and 2 Corinthians 6:2, I said we got it. Now it says, now it's nearer than it used to be, than when we believed. That's strange. So that's just one example of, obviously, our complete deliverance is nearer. We got it now, but there's a lot more coming. That's that lot more, that's what Romans 13:11 is talking about. There's a lot more coming. We already got it, but there's a lot more coming. Look at Ephesians chapter 1.
Where?
Ephesians chapter 1. Right after Hezekiah. I think, yes. Ephesians chapter 1. It says in verse 7, in whom we're going to have...
Nope.
Oh, in whom we have what?
Redemption.
Redemption. Through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, according to the riches of his grace. Okay, so according to that verse, we got it, right? Okay. Now, drop your eyeballs down to verse 14, which is the earnest, or the token, or the down payment of our inheritance until what?
The redemption.
Of the purchased possession. We're part of that purchased possession. Wait a minute. So in verse 7, we got it. And then in verse 14, it says, this here is the down payment until we get it. Until we get what he already told us we already got in verse 7. Again, that's just another example. Yeah, we got redemption, but there's a lot more coming. You know, that same sort of thing. Look at 1 Peter chapter 1. There's a lot of stuff like this in the Bible where, you know, yeah, you got it, but there's a lot more coming. We're just looking at a couple of them. And this will be sort of to set a pattern. I think it might help us when we get to the book of Psalms later.
Psalms.
Sort of like Panuma, I guess. I don't know. 1 Peter chapter 1. We'll just start in verse 1. It says, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the strangers scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, elect according to the foreknowledge of God the Father through sanctification of the Spirit unto obedience and sprinkling of the blood of Jesus Christ, grace unto you and peace be multiplied. Does it say grace at some time in the future is going to be unto you? No, it says grace unto you. Okay, so if it's grace unto you, when is he talking about that grace getting unto you? Right now. All right. Now... Drop your eyes down to verse 13. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that's gonna be brought unto you at the appearing of Jesus Christ. What? I thought he already said in verse 2, it's already unto us. Now he says, the grace that is to be brought unto you. Again, just another example, same thing. Yeah, we got it. We got a lot of stuff we didn't deserve. But there's a lot of more coming that we don't deserve also. Now we'll go back up to verse 3. We stopped at verse 2. Verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again into a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance. And that's that same thing, the earnest of our inheritance. Remember we read in Ephesians 1:14, that's the same inheritance. To an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and it does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation. Wait a minute, I thought the same thing, you know, the big salvation that's coming. Unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time, wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, you're in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith or believing, being much more precious than of gold that perishes, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom, Jesus Christ, having not seen you love, in whom, though now you don't see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. That unspeakable, I think we would say, you just can't put it into words. You could talk about it all you want to. You could try the best you want to describe it. You could use the best words that there are, but it just doesn't really do the job. And that's talking about Now, though you see him not, yet believing, you rejoice with joy unspeakable. That's right. It's talking about right now. Now, with that little bit of background, we've looked at, you know, the salvation, the redemption, the grace. This, I want to look at this joy thing. Look at Psalm 49. I don't even know if the word joy is in Psalm 49, but we got to look at this one before we look at the other one. Like that... What was that movie? Analyze This? We're going to talk about the first thing or the other thing? What other thing? And we're going to talk about the other thing and we don't talk about the first thing. So that's Psalm 49. We're going to talk about the first thing before we talk about the other thing. All right? Psalm 49. We're just going to start in verse 1. Listen to this, all you people. Give ear, all you inhabitants of the world. Both low and high, rich and poor together. I guess that'd be everybody. My mouth shall speak of wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be of understanding. I will incline mine ear to a parable. I'll open my dark saying upon the heart. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil, when the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about or shall surround me? This, I was curious about this. What is that, the iniquity of my heels? What's that talking about? I had to look that up. Strong's Concordance says that heels was a wrong Hebrew word, that it should have been supplanter. And iniquity is the perverseness or the perversity of my supplanters shall surround me. Well, what does that mean? A supplanter, the first time that's used is in when Jacob was born. Jacob and Esau. Remember, Esau was born first. He was red and hairy. And Jacob, what was Jacob holding onto?
His heel.
And the word Jacob, or the name Jacob, means heel catcher or supplanter. And when you follow the thing along, remember, Jacob ended up, a supplanter is somebody who gets something that legitimately belongs to somebody else. What legitimately belonged to Esau? His birthright and his blessing, the blessing. Well, who ended up getting both Esau's birthright and Esau's blessing? Jacob did. And Esau at some point says, isn't he rightly called Jacob? He has supplanted me these two times. Like as if it was all his fault. You know, like Esau didn't sell it or do nothing. He had nothing to do with it. It was just Jacob's bad boy. But it says here, when the iniquity of the perversities of my supplanters shall surround me. And I was thinking about that. Okay, so what does that even mean? Well, if a supplanter takes something which legitimately does not belong to them, I thought, huh, this was like happened back in the old covenant days. Of course, it never happens today because the days are not evil today, right? Don't read Ephesians 5:16, okay? And I thought, huh, there, to me, just one example, there's a bunch of them, but one example. Most of us in this age, in this room, were old enough in the like mid to late 70s, there was a commercial that came on TV. A new idea, I guess, had come out. The idea was, we'll make these little plastic cards and we'll give them to people, and that way they can spend money that they really don't have. And we'll just hammer them on the interest rates. But we want them to, we don't want to tell them, you know, we're going to steal every nickel from you. So what? Master the possibilities. That would be a great phrase, so people could just run that thing up to the max, and then they could buy something worth $1,000, but in 5 years they'll pay $6,000 because we'll be getting the other five. Did that other five really legitimately belong to them?
No.
They legitimately took what belonged to somebody else. There might be one or two other examples, but you know, it says here in verse 5, when the perversity of my supplanters shall surround me. And you know, Galatians 1:4 says this present evil age. Ephesians 5:16 says the days are evil. This sort of thing, I don't think it passed with the new administration. So that's just a side note, whatever. Thought it was interesting. Verse 6, they who trust in their God, in the one true God, and both, no, it doesn't say that. It says they that trust in their what?
Wealth.
And boast themselves in the multitude of their what?
Riches.
Now, just in the context of what we just read in verse 5, I wonder where they might have gotten some of that wealth and some of those riches. By taking what legitimately belonged to somebody else. You know, what are we going to charge for gas at the pump? Okay, how much does it cost us? Well, we know everybody needs it, so whatever. There might be a couple other examples. Verse 6, those that trust in their wealth, boast in the multitude of their riches. Verse 7, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him, no matter how much wealth and riches they got. For the redemption of their soul is precious, and it ceases forever. One of the translations, I think, says, and it's forever unattainable, meaning forever unattainable by works of man, you know, buy it off or whatever. Verse 9, that he should still live forever and not see corruption. For he sees that wise men die, likewise the idiot and the brutish person perish, and leave their wealth to others. He sees this stuff. Verse 11, their inward thought is that their houses are going to continue forever and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Verse 12, nevertheless, no matter what they do, man being in honor abides not. He's like the beasts that perish. This their way is their folly, their idiocy. Yet their posterity, even though this their way is their stupidity, nevertheless their posterity approve their sayings. Selah. That means just hang on for a minute. Just pause. It's like a musical thing, I guess. It says somewhere a song to the chief musician. But, you know, he says it and then Selah, just pause. All right. Verse 14, like sheep, they're laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them. When?
In the morning.
And their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. You got a couple different groups here. It says death shall feed on them, and the them is talking about the people he's been talking about. You know, the people they trust in their riches, they brag about how wealthy they are. That's the them. Death shall feed on them. And then it says, and the upright. That's a different group. The upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Which, of course, we see this every day. You know, if You know, if you are in a bad spot, you know, last night, this morning when you woke up, you had dominion over all the bad things that were ever coming on you yesterday, right? Maybe not. Maybe not. So what's he talking about there in the morning? And then he talks about their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. So that's just something to keep in mind. Something about that phrase, in the morning. Well, is he talking about, you know, come 6 o'clock or something like that? Maybe not. Verse 15, but God will redeem my soul. So it says, their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. Verse 15, but God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me. Pause. Don't be afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dies, he's not going to carry anything away. His glory is not going to descend after him. Though while he lived, he blessed the one true God. Oh, sorry. Though while he lived, he blessed who?
His soul.
Oh, look at me. And men will praise you when you do well to
yourself.
You know, congratulations. Good going. Okay, whatever. Verse 19, he shall go to the generation of his fathers. They shall never see light. Man that's in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish. That understandeth not is going back to some of this stuff that he was talking about in verses 11, 12, and 13. Their inward thought, their houses are going to endure forever. He abides not. This their way is their folly. And yet even so, people know it's stupid. But they still say, oh, good job. I want to be like you. I approve your sayings. You know, man that's in honor, oh, look how wealthy I am. I'm bragging about how great stuff I got. And understand it's not. You don't understand it. You live for 80 years and then you kick the bucket. And there's nothing further? He's like the beast. The beast is like an elephant or like a zebra or a turtle. And he lived for a little bit, and then he died, and that was it. Just like that. The thing I wanted to look at, and we read the psalm, there's a big contrast between the guy in this life and what's coming up in the future, right? And that really helps us out in verse 14, when it says, like sheep they're laid in the grave, death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Now we're going to get to what we really wanted to get to, okay? We had to do the first thing before we could do the second thing. Psalm 30. Psalm 30. And it's sort of, you know, we saw there's salvation and there's salvation, redemption and redemption. We saw grace and grace. We saw that we had joy unspeakable. Keeping that last one in mind and keeping in mind about, you know, the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Psalm 30. Let's again start with verse 1. It says, I will extol thee, O Lord, for you have lifted me up and have not made my foes to rejoice over me. O Lord my God, I cried unto you, and you have healed me. O Lord, you have brought up my soul from the grave. You have kept me alive that I should not go down to the pit. Sing unto the Lord, O ye saints of his, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holiness. For his anger endures but a moment. In his favor is what?
Life.
Life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes when?
In the morning.
In the morning. And you could keep on reading it if you wanted to. I like the very last part of verse 12, the last phrase in the entire psalm. O Lord my God, I'll give thanks unto you how long?
Forever.
Weeping may endure for a night. You've noticed this probably in your life. No matter what bad thing might have happened to you yesterday, first thing in the morning you always have joy, right? Because everything is always better, right? Not necessarily. This in the morning is like that Psalm 49:14, in the morning. The upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. We're upright, according biblically. I know we sin, you know, we still got sin in our blood, but biblically, we're upright. But we don't necessarily have dominion over the knuckleheads every morning. You know, I was in debt $13,000 last night. but I got the money. Now there's $13,000 in debt to me because it's in the morning. It doesn't really work that way. You know, it's the same with this joy. Joy comes in the morning. It's not that, you know, if something tragic happened yesterday, it's not necessarily first thing in the morning you're really bouncing out of bed. It might be a few mornings. It could be who knows how long before you finally get your equilibrium back, so to speak. Things happen. That's life. That's this life. But this morning is talking about the same morning that Psalm 49:14 was talking about in the resurrection. It's compared to what we got, you know, like, what is it, 1 Peter said, they rejoice with joy. You know, now you greatly rejoice. They rejoice with joy unspeakable. We really couldn't describe adequately the joy that we have right now. I mean, if you try to, you can do the best job you can. It's just like, you know, describe apple pie to somebody that's never had a bite of apple pie. You can use the best words you can think of. The only way you're really going to know, take a bite. Now that's how you're going to know. Same with the joy that we have. We got it. We could describe it the best we could. But the only way a person can really know, they got to experience it for themselves. And a lot of things are really like that. But the joy we got right now, even though we rejoice greatly now, compared to the joy we're going to have later, it's like, yeah, we got joy now, but joy comes in the morning. Joy comes in the resurrection. Compared to what we're going to have, it's like we ain't never had it before. It's like we didn't even know how to spell the word compared to what God's waiting for us, got waiting for us in the future. And I thought that would just be great to look at, because as great as this life is, you know, it still says the days are evil. It says that in Ephesians 5:16. It's a present evil age. It says that. Jesus also prayed, Matthew 6:13, deliver us from what?
Evil.
We have not yet been, we've been delivered from evil in the sense that the price has been paid. But have we been delivered from evil in the sense that now we're fully experiencing the deliverance that's already been paid for? Not yet. When we fully experience where there's just no evil, where is it? I see some smoke way over there. It's going to be ascending up forever and ever. But as far as any negative impact it's going to have on any of God's kingdom, where's the evil? There ain't none. Joy comes in the morning. Could you even possibly picture that? A situation where there is no evil. You know, you think, typically, you know, we think, oh, like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. But was it really? Because I think in that garden there was somebody else present, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Better than that. Better than that. Is the serpent going to be where we are throughout all the... There's not going to be nothing. It's just clean. This life is great. No complaints about this life. But joy comes. It's like, if it's coming, is it here yet? No. In Psalm 30, joy comes in the morning. It's like, yeah, you've got it, but you don't really have it. It hasn't really got here yet. Wait till it really gets here. Then you're going to know what joy is really all about. And so I thought it'd be neat to look at that stuff and just review and get blessed.